Thank you very much. Well, I thought I would not a specialist talk here, but a more kind of easy introductory talk into the competing mechanisms of mixing on the one hand, and separation of alcohol and water, say, in dynamic circulation, typically in experiments of ethanol and water. And I want to really don't want to go into much detail, just to bring about the message how these two mechanisms can explain some of the structures that I see. There have been a lot of experiments here. I see a large experimental group there in the background, starting maybe the modern experiments. I want to say there are old experiments and more modern experiments. The modern experiments, they started with a group of Zorko Kolodna, but then they have been picked up by a lot of other groups as well. These are other groups here in Santa Barbara, particularly the State Canal, but then in Germany also, Rebert and also Bodenstadt, and that Steinberg in Israel, Platten in Belgium. So there has been quite some activity, but it seems to have faded a little bit for reasons which I find deplorable, and I think they are not really worried, because as I hope I can show you, the binary mixture convection poses a much bigger richness in phenomena than the pure field convection. Almost everything that you can see in pure field, you can see also in binary mixture plus. And I think I should write down here also the name of students and postdocs who really have contributed much in my understanding on this dynamic and properties. So I'm going to speak about the situation that is standard in experiments of a really banal setup in a rectangular or an annular confinement that is heated from below in a gravitational field. And then in pure fluid, one would see close to the onset of convection just these straight stationary flows that for historical reasons are sometimes called stationary overturning convection rolls. They are aligned like here, like cigars in a box, or here radially across the narrow circular channel. On the other hand, in a mixture like ethanol water, one sees, in addition to these simple stationary structures, depending on parameters, traveling waves where the whole pattern is moving around, standing wave transients, or also localized traveling waves that are objects which consist only of a few, say 10 or so rolls, which are localized and surrounded by quiescent fluid where no convection takes place. It's as if the fluid is boiling only locally. Then in other parameter ranges and in bigger systems, bigger than these here, one can see squares, which can be thought of as being a superposition of two roll patterns, X roll and Y roll patterns of equal amplitude. Then there are these things called cross rolls, where say the X roll amplitude is bigger than the Y roll amplitude, or vice versa. And then there are also more dynamic things like oscillations between these two states, where the X and Y roll amplitudes are oscillating in counterphase, so that whenever they become equal, you have a square pattern. And then there is close to onset also, in binary gas mixtures at least, spiral defect chaos, about which I am not going to speak. Basically restricting myself to these two first things.
Question is that when you see patterns like this, the rotation is always opposite from the side to side, right?
That's right.
How about when you look at the 2D squares or things like that? How would the opposite of this manifest itself?
Well, I would have to draw, say, this would be the positions of maximal upward flow, and you would have to draw also a position of, say, maximal downward flow, which I have ignored here. And so in the corner of these four things, the flow, upward flow intensity would be higher than, say, in the middle between two.
Are the oscillations neurotic or positive?
Say that again. This here?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It turns out that they were first seen, in a sense, inadvertently, in a system the experimentalists thought to be pure fluid, but it was really a mixture, and they found it to be first harmonic, then there grew a kind of anharmonicity, and then there was a PhD thesis by Le Gall et al., who saw indications of a period doubling, that they saw, he saw a period 2 appearing in the oscillation. And we followed that a little bit further and saw that there was an interesting cascade coming on later on. Not a period doubling cascade, but a period adding cascade. I don't think I want to go into the details here. And we could follow that, the first four steps. And then basically the system got locked into one of these two states here. So there is no indication, at least close to onset, of a more richer dynamics than a few periods doubling or period adding. I should say all this I'm speaking about is close to onset. I will make that a little bit clearer later on. Now these patterns that I have marked here with the green filled dots, they are occurring close to onset only in mixture. In pure fluid you don't have them. So if you switch off the coupling between the concentration field and the other fields, then they disappear. You end up then only with SOC states. So it's really the concentration field that generates this state. And it does so via a coupling which is a kind of Onsager cross-coupling, which is called the Zore effect. The Zore effect says that if one just looks at, say, this balance equation for the concentration and ignore for the moment the left side, then you see that the temperature variation creates, according to this balance equation, a concentration variation with a coupling coefficient psi that is called the separation ratio and which can be controlled experimentally. And this is an Onsager effect much similar to, say, the Peltier or Seebeck effect, where in a metal, by applying a temperature difference, you either can have a charge separation, that means the voltage, or you can make a current flow. This is the same kind of nonlinear current driven by an external gradient. So this is the coupling which couples the concentration field to the temperature and to the rest of the world. If you switch off this coupling by putting psi equals to zero, then you are left with this equation, has a scalar equation, which with diffusion. And so, in the absence of further forcing the concentration field, the diffusive term will drive the system towards C equals constant. No concentration variation at all, because this term here, the advective term, is just a conservative term which shovels concentration around. So this is the generator for concentration, and it keeps up concentration variations against the action of diffusion and against the advective mixing of this nonlinear term. And moreover, the concentration variations that are generated here, they enter into the driving force, or the whole business, the convection, the buoyancy force. The buoyancy force being the product of gravitational acceleration times density variations, and for small deviations from the mean you can apply a linear equation of state, and that tells you that the mass density depends not only on temperature variations, which is the ordinary driving mechanism for ordinary Rayleigh-Denard systems, but also on concentration variations. I'll come to that. That's right now just a number. a number where you have an experimental handle on.
The concentration goes from 0 to 1, is that it?
Yeah. Now, these concentration variations, they influence the buoyancy force, and therefore there is also a nonlinear feedback coupling between the concentration and the velocity field, because the buoyancy force changes the momentum balance, the velocity field, and the velocity field in turn changes the concentration effectively, and there's a nonlinear feedback going on, which basically is the reason for the bigger complexity of this set of equations compared to the set of equations where E has disappeared when you set the Doré coupling psi equals to 0. Well, first of all, I wouldn't consider that to be a model. I think these are the hydrodynamic field equations that, to the best of our knowledge, describe the situation really extremely well. There have been admittedly left out terms, which you can justify very well, like, for example, the other Ondaga cross coupling between temperature and concentration, which is a so-called Dufour effect. There has been left out effects coming from the compressibility, but we are dealing here with systems where the velocity is very small compared to sound velocity. And therefore, I think this is a little better than a model. So the experimental setup would be just an enclosed container like this one here, ethanol water, that you heat from below. Then the applied temperature difference across the fluid generates concentration variations I'll show in a second. And you can observe them by shadow graph pictures, which I show also later on. Now, if one rescales these fields and the variables appropriately, and one sees that there are these four numbers which are entering, which are defining the system. Frontal number in the ratio of kinematic viscosity and heat diffusivity, which is for the liquid case I'm considering here only of the order of 10. Then this is the important number which explains some things later on, is the smallness of the Lewis number as a ratio between diffusivity, concentration diffusivity, and heat diffusivity. And here is your Doré coupling coefficient. Into that enters three thermodynamic quantities. Theta is the solute expansion coefficient of the concentration in a linear equation of state. Alpha, the thermal expansion coefficient. T naught, the mean temperature. And that's, by the way, also how in an experiment you can control the size and the sign of psi by varying the mean temperature. You can apply the temperature difference and also apply the change the mean temperature and in fact also the mean concentration. KT is the thermal diffusion ratio. That's a transport coefficient. Again, psi 0 would imply that you end up with a pure fluid limiting case. I want to stress that because I use that later on. No, beta is positive. Beta and alpha is positive. Well, I haven't written down the equation of state, but in an equation of state where delta rho would be rho times 1 minus alpha delta c minus theta delta c, then beta would be positive and alpha as well, because if c is the lighter component. No, psi. KT can change sign. You can have concentration go to the cold end of the system, alcohol. Or, depending on KT, you can have it also go to the other end. And that's basically done by KT. Alpha and beta are not changing much with the temperature at hand. They are such, if the concentration of the lighter component, say that of alcohol, then alpha and beta are positive because increasing the lighter component decreases the delta rho. Alpha is just minus d rho by dt.
What is KT?
KT measures how big the concentration difference you get if you apply a temperature difference. It's basically the ratio between these two. And in a proper non-dimensionless way, you would write down psi or KT after non-dimensionalizing it as delta T divided by delta T. So, except for beta and alpha, this is how experimentalists would measure a psi. They apply a temperature variation and observe the resulting concentration separation in a system without flow. Okay, then sometimes I will use this reduced Rayleigh number, which is the Rayleigh number divided by that one for onset of convection in a pure fluid, and that is given by the temperature difference across the system in the pure fluid or in the actual system. And then I also have to say here, somewhat to a disappointment to my fellow fully developed turbulence colleagues here in the program, that the flow that I'm investigating here, or I'm reviewing, that's only small Reynolds numbers of the order of maximal 1 to 5. However, the Peclet number, the ratio of advective transport of concentration divided by the diffusive transport rate of concentration, that's very large because D is small in liquid. So you have a dominance of advection, dominance of nonlinear terms, and that gives rise to interesting complex structures. In a sense, if you would have concentration alone in the world being governed by an equation of such a big Peclet number, then you would get kind of turbulent behavior. And it's only because the concentration field is coupled to these two smoothly varying fields, as we will see, as a consequence of these two numbers being small, that the concentration doesn't really play wild. The forcing, measured in terms of the temperature difference here, is also quite moderate, not much bigger than twice the critical Rayleigh number for onset of convection. So, I want to restrict now myself to negative separation ratios, where the concentration variation that is induced by the Zoré effect is such that the buoyancy force is reduced because the reduced in comparison to the thermal part of the buoyancy force, because with delta C and this equation here entering with a negative sign here, you get a reduction in the buoyancy force. That reduction in the buoyancy force tells you that you have to heat the system a little bit more in order to reach the critical buoyancy force for onset of convection. The onset of convection is governed by interplay, that shows the previous slide with a different number, of forcing and dissipation. Oh, sorry, yeah. Delta C is minus one, yeah, you're right. Um, the dissipation here of these two diffusive elements is has to be overcome by the forcing from the buoyancy force, alpha times delta C times the gravitational contrast. And so therefore, if the buoyancy is reduced by the influence of the concentration field, you need a higher temperature difference in order to get enough buoyancy to start convection going. And therefore, that explains this graph that I need, which shows how the onset of convection is increased towards larger temperature difference, larger Rayleigh numbers, if you make the Soret coupling go from zero to more negative values. So it requires larger heating in order to drive convection in a mixture than in a pure fluid. Pure fluid is tried to zero. And the second thing is that if the Soret coupling is sufficiently large, then one observes an oscillatory onset. Here, the convection grows in this kind of stationary manner. However, if the Soret coupling is sufficiently big, then convection is driven oscillatory. And that can also be explained quite easily. The Soret effect was an off-diagonal coupling in these two equations for concentration and temperature. It appeared in the concentration balance equation, there appeared the temperature variation via the Soret effect. So if you write it down in a matrix, it's an off-diagonal element. And then you know that if you couple two relaxing things like concentration and temperature by an off-diagonal element, and if this off-diagonal element is strong enough, then you can generate a complex eigenvalue. You generate a restoring force. By coupling two relaxing systems can generate a restoring force. That gives rise to oscillations. And that's precisely happening here. No, I didn't want to go into this argument, but I think he forced me to do that. I know this in the literature there is this argument that the Lewis number has to be small, a separation of time scale, for the appearance of oscillations. But I think that's not really correct. Because also for Lewis number equals to 1, if you drive psi to be big enough negatively, you get oscillations. It's really the strength of the off-diagonal coupling which makes the appearance of the complex eigenvalue. It's not the separation of scale. That one can see if one goes through this linear equation and just makes a few mode truncations containing the critical modes that can grow, and then one sees that. But you can cook these two coupled equations for temperature and concentration to a kind of harmonic oscillator, and you can ask what is the criterion for the appearance of a restoring force, maybe a frequency, and you see that the size of the coupling which enters into it. Yes, that I haven't explained. I guess I haven't explained that. It's a more complicated thing. In fact, the stationary bifurcation goes all the way to infinity. And of course, in experiments, this line preempts stationary state. No, I don't think I have an easy hand-waving explanation why the stationary threshold is so much higher than the oscillatory. I only offer the explanation why there is an oscillatory one. Okay, now I'll show a little later on, just in a second, a little video, kind of old video. We say fix the separation ratio here to some negative value and then see what's happening as one increases the thermal driving, the Rayleigh number. First, no, if you have no temperature variation across the cell at all, then let's consider an idealized situation of such an annular container, which is radially narrow, and let us ignore the variation in radial direction, which is to some extent justified. And so then one can look at the outside and see when there is no temperature difference across the fluid, that's just a perfectly homogeneous system, color-coded here with green, no concentration separation. Then if you increase the temperature, but still in this conductive state here, say you go to here, then concentration separation takes place. The lighter alcohol for negative separation ratio moves to the colder top plate, and the heavier water moves to the bottom plate. Or, of course, the separation is not perfect, it's only 10% or so. But there is a concentration, vertical concentration gradient. Blue is always in the following large alcohol concentration, and red is small alcohol concentration. And then if you increase the temperature even more, increase the buoyancy before beyond the critical one, then convection sets in. And convection will start to do things like mixing. But the external temperature gradient keeps it against the action of mixing the concentration separation, the concentration gradient. And so I'll show you the first maybe a little 2 minute video. Quality of that video is not too good, unfortunately. Oh, I see. So it says here, transition from a standing wave to a traveling wave. Here's the concentration, and we have just crossed the bifurcation threshold. The former conductive concentration layering is start to oscillate. Turns out it start to oscillate in a standing wave pattern, which is linearly, at least, the superposition of two left and right traveling wave patterns. Here you can see how far we are in a movie. These are lateral profiles at mid-height here of concentration, and of blue is velocity, and red is temperature. And then you see, first, the concentration contrast is still very much operating, and now there's a kind of breaking. And one of the, in this case, the left traveling wave has won. The winner takes all here in this system. The standing wave solution is unstable. And one enters into a traveling wave state with a very large concentration contrast, which eventually will decrease as a function of time on a much longer diffusive time scale, such a way that the system gets better and better mixed, and that the concentration wave plateaus here. Contrast between this role, which is almost not to be seen.
Is Schottenberg a shadow graph?
Yeah, Schottenberg is a shadow graph. Right. It's a radial shadow graph. That's a numerical shadow graph, but that's what you would observe in an experiment. In fact, these kind of shadow graphs have been quantitatively compared with experimental ones. A group of Pinsa and Kolodna. Excuse me?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. So this that's it.
That was a 2D simulation.
That was, yeah, that was a 2D simulation. We can switch it off now. Now, that's very nice, this picture, I think, but one doesn't really understand what's going on there in detail. And that, I think, one can better understand if one does not look at the transient, but if one looks at stationary, relaxed, final states. So far, I have here just shown an experiment where you have crossed the oscillatory onset, and then the intensity of almost everything first grew, except for the concentration, which grew and then later on declined. But the other amplitudes just grew monotonically to their final state values for a traveling wave. Here it's shown a bifurcation diagram of flow intensity or Nusselt number, measuring how well the fluid is convecting, of convective intensity versus this reduced Rayleigh number. And in order to understand what's going on, it's useful not only to consider the bifurcation diagram of the intensity of the flow, but also the bifurcation diagram of the frequency of phase velocity of the pattern that is plotted here. So at onset, well, first of all, the onset is not at the onset of the pure fluid bifurcation point, but it has been shifted up because of this negative Fourier effect. You have to apply a higher heating in order to get the thing moving. At onset, the frequency is high. There is an unstable solution of traveling waves, which is bifurcating backwards. And as one moves along this bifurcation branch, the frequency goes down until the system becomes stable. There, the frequency has maybe dropped by a factor of 2 or 3, and then it continues to drop down all the way to zero when the traveling wave ends here at this particular driving our star and becomes a stationary state. And so there is another bifurcation diagram to be included in this graph as well. That's the bifurcation of a stationary state, which becomes stable here and was unstable here. And then it's also interesting to note as a reference the bifurcation diagram of the pure fluid system, which is here, this dotted line. So the pure fluid behavior, or a system which has no degrees of freedom of the concentration coupled to it, they bifurcate forwardly at this onset, which they define to be 1, and then it grows more or less linearly, sublinearly with Rayleigh number. And you see that when the flow intensity is large, then these states are very close to the pure fluid system, and concentration doesn't play a big role. So we expect already that concentration loses its influence as one moves up along this branch here, and the influence of bifurcation of concentration might be largest close to the bifurcation points where the amplitudes, the convective amplitudes, are small and where the frequencies are large. And that one can see here in this diagram. I have shown here 4 snapshots along this bifurcation branch. Just look at the 2 top figures here, which is just the same that I plotted on the previous diagram, of the convective intensity versus Rayleigh number and frequency versus Rayleigh number. And now I'll discuss here 4 states on the upper stable traveling wave branch, and 3 states, E, B, and A, on the traveling wave branch, and 1 state B, which is the final stationary traveling wave state. And in the movie that we show, we make here a transition state to here. We went up all the way up here to this state, which has a slow frequency. And now we want to understand what's going on here during the time evolution and what's the relation between structure on the one hand and dynamics. So let's start, say, at the stationary pattern. Here I've shown this, the velocity field together with the temperature field for this state here and this state. Then here's this, again, the shadow graph intensity. And here is the concentration profile. You might see from the back that there are also little dots included as well. I'll come back to that. They indicate the streamlines in the co-moving frame of reference. And then here I plot field profiles at mid-height here. Say the concentration wave profile, this sawtooth or trapezoidal shape thing, the velocity, vertical velocity, and the temperature here. And you see immediately that the concentration is really the odd man out. It is behaving completely different than the other field. Concentration wave is more complicated than the more or less harmonic temperature and velocity wave. So let's maybe start here with this pure fluid, stationary state, which is consists of two mirror symmetric rolls. Here's a right turning roll and here's a left turning roll. All fields are mirrors, images of each other, and therefore the concentration is evenly distributed along this mirror symmetric plane. It is well mixed, except for a little narrow boundary layer. That's where the flow is transporting fluid from the boundary layer with little alcohol upwards and from the alcohol-rich boundary layer downwards. These are plume-like things. And they are plume-like and so narrow because, again, concentration diffusion is small and advection is large, and you would see that similarly at high Rayleigh or Reynolds number thermal turbulence, because there again advection of the temperature or of the heat is large compared to heat diffusivity. Then if you go downwards in Rayleigh number, pattern starts to move. Concentration becomes, not only concentration, everything is mirror symmetry broken. As soon as the pattern starts to move, the left and the right turning rolls are no longer mirror symmetric to each other. I'll explain why, but let me first observe what's happening here. This plumes or jets, which are here feeding the left and the right turning roll, the right and the left turning roll mirror symmetrically, become a little asymmetric. This one feeds more the left one, and this, the right turning roll, is fed more from the boundary layer from the top. And if you go down here in flow intensity and simultaneously increase the propagation velocity, the phase velocity, this asymmetry grows. You now see very well deformed regions with closed streamlines in which the fluid the concentration seems to be trapped, effectively trapped, and almost perfectly diffusively homogenized. Because you still see a little bit of these jets here. I don't know whether you can see it from the back here, but if you look at the trace of the concentration field, at mid-height you see that there's almost no variation, only here at the former jets there's a little enhancement, and if one would look very closely one would see the other end of the jet as well. So concentration seems to be trapped into this roll-like region and then cleared out diffusively. One also sees that there is a close relation by looking at the bifurcation diagram of frequency versus R and the concentration variance versus R. C minus C naught squared, square root of that. They see this bifurcation curve are almost the same, and in fact I will show later on that frequency on the one hand and mixing on the other hand of these propagating systems are very closely related. This zero frequency state is best mixed, almost perfectly mixed, whereas this high frequency state has already a very large concentration variance. There's a large concentration gradient, a large separation in concentration going on. And now the question is, where does this, how can one understand this symmetry breaking between, which occurs, by the way, which is kind of amusing if you decrease the driving. Typically you have symmetry breaking going to more complex states by increasing the forcing, the stress. But here you do it the other way around, because of course this is a trade-off. You reduce the convective intensity and therefore you make the Bolle effect more efficient. You increase the effect of separation. And that breaks the symmetry between the left and right turning rolls if you come down in Rayleigh number and cross this bifurcation point R star. Now where does this asymmetry come from? Well, that's relatively simple. That one can understand best if one uses the fact that for the moment that the concentration isn't diffusing at all. So if you then look at the traveling wave in a co-moving frame, a frame that is co-moving with a phase velocity, then all the fields, and in particular the concentration field, is stationary. And the balance equation in the co-moving frame reduces to this equation here. And if you ignore the diffusive action, then you see that the concentration, isoconcentration lines are identical to the streamlines of the velocity field in the co-moving frame. So in the co-moving frame, alcohol is transported along the streamlines. And that would be the only dynamics there is if you ignore diffusive smoothening out. So let's see what's happening there. So if you have a convective pattern like that here, this is a snapshot of a convective pattern, that is moving with some velocity, then by going to the co-moving frame, you have to add or subtract this velocity, and then you see what's happening. Just by adding the constant velocity field to this velocity field, you change to a streamline pattern, which has the symmetry broken. The closed streamline regions are alternatingly closer to the top or to the bottom layer, and you can almost guess here what's happening, how the top layer is being fed predominantly into this closed region and the lower layer is predominantly connected to this one here.
The concentration decreases when you go from bottom to top.
Say that again.
The concentration decreases when you go from bottom to top.
Yeah, the concentration is always, because of the applied temperature difference, high at the top and low at the bottom.
But that will get reversed in the closed streamline regions?
Will that
get reversed in the closed streamline regions? That would be the same way.
No, say this closed streamline region will be more. Wait a minute, where is it? This closed streamline will be more alcohol rich, and this one will be more water rich.
So, just from the point of view of this, you just talked about the stationary configuration and the problem. Is one more unstable than the other?
Wait a minute. When I say stationary, well, maybe I mixed the word stationary, used the word stationary for two different things. This is a relaxed state of traveling wave, which is a dynamic state. However, it is stationary in the sense that it doesn't change anymore. And you can make it look stationary by going to a co-moving frame of reference.
Mm-hmm.
And the field is time independent. So, but in addition to this dynamic state, there is still a competing other state around, which is really stationary, also in the lab frame, and these are these SOCs. And so this answers your question. In this range here that I'm considering, the red line is the stable state. And the blue line is unstable here, but then there is a bifurcation, a transition. With zero frequency, the traveling wave ends on the blue solution for the stationary state. In fact, one can manipulate that experimentally, but also numerically by imposing boundary conditions which forbid phase translation. And then you could stabilize the blue thing all the way to its saddle. And you could abolish traveling wave states altogether if you make the system small enough so that there is no phase propagation possible. Now back to viewing this traveling wave state. This is just a snapshot of a velocity field of a traveling wave state. If you view that from a co-moving frame, then you see that. And if you view this kind of state from a, if this state is moving with a faster velocity, or if this convective velocity is smaller, then the ratio of these two things, the phase velocity in x in the lateral direction divided by the convective velocity in vertical direction, if that is smaller, bigger than one, then you don't have any more closed streamlines. All streamlines are open. Yeah, the previous ratio, the first one I showed you, was one where so here the phase velocity is smaller than the flow velocity, and here the phase velocity is bigger than the flow velocity. Well, actually, it's maximal flow velocity. It doesn't play a role, but in this case, it would be vertical. Yeah. And that now explains, I think, the whole picture here. I want to pick up this idea about the relation between the existence of closed streamlines versus only open streamlines, and how that picture changes with changing the ratio of phase velocity relative to flow velocity. So here's again, unfortunately I have changed with a color code, it's an old new graph, the traveling wave bifurcation diagram of the flow velocity together with the frequency or phase velocity of the traveling wave, omega divided by k. And now let's start here from the lower part here. So right at onset, the flow velocity is small. No convection at all. The traveling wave frequency is high. So you are in a situation where you have only open streamlines. Right? Then, if you march along this unstable branch, the flow velocity increases, and simultaneously, the phase velocity decreases until you hit a point where they become equal. And that's exactly the point where, for the first time, there appears a closed streamline. It's just adding this kind of graph that I showed on the previous graph here. If you add just patterns with different amplitudes here, change this amplitude relative to this amplitude and add these two, then you see first if this amplitude is small and this velocity is large, well then if this is zero, then you just see straight lines. Okay. You could observe, or nobody can forbid that, you can observe the conductive state where there is no convection at all, zero pattern from a co-moving frame. Then you see this straight streamline. And then you switch on a little bit of convection. Convection is always closed rolls. So you add a little bit of closed rolls onto that, which gives rise to this deformation. And then you increase this closed roll part on cost of the truth, the Galilean transformation velocity, and then you generate more and more deformed streamlines. But since the streamlines in the co-moving frame of reference are also the isoconcentration lines, you see first, close to onset, just harmonically varying concentration wave profiles, like here in A. They grow in size, in amplitude, until at this point, for the first time, there are closed regions with closed streamlines appearing. And then, once that happens, the concentration is effectively trapped in this closed streamlined region. Diffusion is only homogenizing it, and the waves get chopped off. They become flat over the regions of closed streamlines. Then if one increases the flow intensity further and decreases the propagation velocity, these closed streamline regions grow. They become larger, and therefore the regions over which you see a concentration plateau, because as I said, alcohol is trapped in here and it cannot diffuse across the streamlines out because diffusion is small. But it's trapped here for a very long time, and so eventually it gets smoothed out within the streamline region. And so the concentration is chopped off at the lower level, extending over, and the constant plateau region is limited by the extent of the both streamline regions. And then in the extreme limiting case of zero propagation, then Galilean, the co-moving frame of reference and the laboratory frame are the same, and you just have this closed streamline, and within it everything is well mixed. Except well mixed to zero, I should say, except for this little remainder of the coming from the plume boundary layer. There's one more. I'm ready in 2 minutes. I think there's. Well, there is a bifurcation. It's a I didn't show that to you, how the frequency grows out of zero here. I think the best way to understand what's going on is here is to look at what the frequency is doing, or time analogously what the mixing, the variance of the concentration is doing. There is a hop, it's not a hop bifurcation, it's a drift instability, where the left and the right traveling wave are growing out of the stationary, out of the SOP state, and they do that in the square root behavior of the frequency part. So this square root dependence is indeed a discontinuity. Okay, I wanted to say one more word about the first appearance of the closed streamline, when phase velocity and convective flow velocity become equal. Here one sees this is a real numerical simulation where one, with a code that we have been using, but could also generate the unstable solutions. There is a kind of dent. And so it, first we thought, well, this is fortuitous that they are just meeting where the dent is, but that's not the case. And in order to show that, I briefly want to present a few more results on other, more stronger Zure-coupled systems. This is the one I have been discussed, so have been discussing so far, the psi minus 0.25, and then here we increase the Zure coupling. Here again is the flow intensity. This is the pure fluid limit, which is basically in this order parameter, flow intensity versus R, basically growing linearly up. And then with increasing Zure coupling, first of all, the threshold is shifted upwards, because Zure coupling requires stronger heating, and the frequency curves are shifted to larger values. And then I've plotted here this shaded triangle, which is limited on top by a location which has two meanings. On the one, it's the location where the first appearance of closed streamlines occurs, where the phase velocity and the flow velocity becomes equal. But simultaneously, it has also the meaning that this is the breakdown of the simple-minded amplitude extension theory. And that, I think, is very interesting. So the first appearance of closed streamlines, where the harmonic wave shapes get chopped off and get an anharmonic profile, this trapezoidal kind of profile that I've shown, that's simultaneously the location where a simple expansion around the onset breaks down. And that one, we have found that out in the following way. We have parameterized all these bifurcations curves. First of all, you see they are all very much similar, these curves and these. I'll come to that in a second. We have parameterized that in the following way. Instead of investigating here order parameter versus control parameter, we first of all inverted this diagram here, big X being the flow intensity and little r being the control parameter. We inverted that to write it as a function of r versus x instead of x versus r. This is now the pure fluid boundary, right, this one here, the pure fluid bifurcation line, to which asymptotically red, all this red traveling wave bifurcation lines were going. I've shown only one of them, but they are all very similar. And they are all moving for large flow amplitudes towards the limiting behavior of a pure fluid which is perfectly well mixed. And then you see you have to write down a parameterization which reproduces two things. First, you have to ensure that for large x, the red curve approaches the blue curve. That means for large x, this has to become a constant, or in fact, equals to 1. It has to bifurcate here, and you have to accommodate 3 extrema. And the easiest way to do that is by just a rational function. In fact, this rational function does all that. And we have here these parameters, which A and B being fit parameters, which almost perfectly describe all this bifurcation curve. So then this is a representation of the bifurcation diagrams, all the this family of bifurcation diagrams. Well, not in the range that I've used here. I mean, if you account for the fact that there is a dent here, that you can also, of course, describe here when you let two extrema come together. But the number of extrema that you encounter doesn't change with increasing size. Why is that? First of all, it's a very big surprise at all that there is a bifurcation which generates a bistability between a low frequency, low intensity and high intensity state, and that means the low frequency and the high frequency state, and that was completely ununderstood. I think I don't have a simple explanation. I don't have even a complicated explanation for it. I have no idea why there is this additional complication in the backward bifurcation. Typically, if people in the pattern formation business are drawing a backward bifurcation, it goes straight like so. But let me continue to show you how we found out where the limit of applicability of a small amplitude expansion is. Now, if this is the representation of this bifurcation diagram, then you can ask, how well can I represent this by a small x expansion? After all, that's what you are doing. You are expanding around this or that point, depending, well, on the, around this point, around a point at x equal to 0. Well, the radius of convergence of a small x expansion is limited by the poles in the denominator. And therefore, what we did is just determine the poles in the denominator. That gives us the radius of convergence of an extension of this function around x equals to 0. And lo and behold, the upper straight line here is just the x at the radius of convergence of the small x expansion. So that means, that tells us that the small x expansion works only up to the point where first those streamlines appear. And then one has to do other things.
So you did get a minus when you were here?
Say that again?
If
x is small, yeah, then you would expand the B1x up to the A1 minus B1x, right? If you ignore the additional x variation, deviation from the one note of x. And that is this one here. This one minus R os plus A1 minus B1x, that would give you this initial linear slope. And the last U graph, which is just a reminder of the close connection between mixing on the one hand and frequency on the other hand, is a kind of condensed plot where all these states that I've shown here, the stable one and the unstable ones, are lumped into a plot which is to show that the frequency on the one hand and, say, the mixing that was defined in terms of the the mean square root deviation of the concentration from its mean, that they are very much closely related. So here, at onset, separation is biggest, mixing smallest, and you are at n equals to 1 in this kind of notation. And then in the situation of almost few perfectly mixing, you are in a situation where n is almost zero and the frequency is lowest. Here is the zero frequency, n, which is here, and this is the low frequency n, high frequency n, which is there. You see all this different zero, slowly coupled states are falling into one line. And also, it's another thing which comes out of this analysis is that the frequency, and that means also m, since m and frequency are linear related to each other, that means mixing and frequency of the traveling wave, these quantities are related basically to the distance to the well-mixed state, to the pure fluid reference state. So this graph here tells you that the frequency when plotted versus the green distance, either this distance or that distance, doesn't play a role, because this is basically the 45-degree behavior of a pure fluid system, that they all fall on one line. So here is the distance from this point to this point, or from this point to that point, the square root of that plotted versus the frequency, and they are all very similar. I think that's it. No conclusion.
Somehow, I think that you might get some help from the following. I'm not sure that you consider it going down. So, it looked like, in some cases, like when you look at the earlier diagram, you sort of know that one was symmetric and one was slightly straight up and down. And it's really a kind of symmetry breaking. You have this beautiful symmetry here, which is one state, and then you have this state here. It almost looks the same, you just displaced it. And so, what it suggests to me that is if you look at the vorticity, which you have generation here because it turns on the right hand side of the velocity equation. And so the question is, if you look at the vorticity, obviously the sign is to enhance one place and another place. And then you can say, well, how about the centroid of that vorticity? Is it more up or down?
Yeah.
And that might allow you an interpretation for the shifts.
Yeah, I agree that, say, if you would look at the vorticity in the co-moving frame of reference, you would see, say, vorticity profiles which would reflect these kinds of displacement of the closed streamline.
But I'm saying the source of that.
Yeah.
In other words, why is it that it's doing that and not doing just the opposite? Well, you might be able to see the sign of the vorticity in the barycurian term come out and be just away from the fan.
Well, the problem with cause and reaction in this coupled kind of argument is complicated in the sense, if I assume that there is a traveling wave, then I can easily explain why it is connected with a symmetry breaking. Because if this pattern is moving to the right, I just put myself on the co-moving frame of reference and there it is. But that doesn't explain why there is a traveling wave in the first place. And to explain the existence of a traveling wave, I think the easiest way is to go back to onset, where you have to deal with linear equations. And there you only in quotation marks, have to explain why there are two things, namely a frequency and a wave number. The frequency, I think, that is easily understood by analyzing these coupled modes that become critical, and which show you that there is a complex eigenvalue appearing. The wave number, that's common business in pattern formation community. That, I think, is the harder thing. Namely, why does the homogeneous state if you drive it, react by creating a pattern with which is described by a K. In order to get this traveling wave, you have to just have to combine an e to the I kx with an e to the I omega t. I think the omega is more easily explainable than the K, although people in the pattern forming business would maybe protest and say it's easier to understand while there is a structure appearing once you force a system that you can also understand with, on the basis of linear equations, which tell you immediately there is an eigenvalue to the linear operator which generates an e to the ikx solution. But physically I think it's not so easy to understand why a system that you drive, put into an external gradient, drive it away from thermal equilibrium, why it responds by generating the structure. One could ask, well, what are the necessary ingredients? Well, certainly you have to have in your balance equation describing the system gradients in order to generate this thing, and you have to have communication which is basically diffusive by the gradients, and that will give rise to patterns. But I think it's
no, but the also the other point is that you said that there was a certain point at which where the expansion theories broke down.
Yes.
And so the question is, I will ask the same question in terms of, okay, now let's look at the generation of electricity and see if your argument can be made clear. In other words, once the amount of circulation became large, then you would expect a breakdown, you know, and just. In other words, what I'm saying is it's a complementary point of view. Your argument is mostly based on stream function patterns and velocity. Stream function, motion of stream function, what frame of reference and velocity. Whereas perhaps an argument where you're putting on the level of vorticity or the shift of accentuated vorticity would allow you a more
unweighted argument. Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, certainly in this surrounding here, the vorticity is still the right candidate to look at. But if you say follow how people in the this community try to develop a theory, that's basically using a simplified approximation of the velocity field, often in terms of a streamline, and then discuss how the amplitude and the structure of the streamline changes. But I agree it would be useful to have a look at also the vorticity, which is typically not done. And of course, one could argue everything is contained in the velocity field, but having this extra view might be useful.
Any further questions? Thank you. There's one more talk tomorrow at 2:00. Break is going to talk about exact.
Phase diagram. Phase diagram.
We moved it forward.
I hope I can find that. Yeah.
Everybody's packing. Yeah.
Psi versus R.
I could adjust my schedule.
Say that again. What? This is the conductive state.
Yeah.
It's static. Yeah, motionless. Right. At rest, right.
I could do it Thursday or Wednesday, Friday.
Oh, you do Thursday?
Thursday, I take it as so that you're gone, right?
Now, this is off by the schedule. This is a statement about it. Yes.
Wednesday is better.
I've actually made an arrangement with my wife on Wednesday, so there's no...
No, wait a minute. These are bifurcated out of the basics, out of the zero. So maybe we'll draw that at the blackboard.
I was just in touch for a moment. Can we get together on Wednesday sometime?
Yeah. Fine. When?
Maybe the morning sometime. Then would be good because then we have a couple of hours.
Yeah. Okay. I'll drop by your office.
Okay.
Yeah?
I'll send you an email also.
Okay. And
confirm that.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a PC kind of tomorrow.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's say if you plot out of the blackboard the order parameter for the nonlinear solution, then you would have two solutions coming out of the of this parameter plane of R psi. So for convenience, just let me take a cut here. So then. Yeah.
Can you give your slides later to the office?
To whom?
Just in the office. It's open right now. They will make copies of it.
Yeah, okay.
Because you're online now, you know? Thanks again.
You know,
So here first there appears this R off, and then there is an R set. As long as the R set is still finite, there it is. And so then the R os goes like so, and the R set does the following thing. Goes also like so. So there are really two solutions coming out at two different points. This is a traveling wave. And this one here, that's the SOC. Yeah, here is still the SOC. Stationary overturning convection. It's a stationary solution. No traveling. And here this is the traveling wave branch. And that ends, if one makes close up of that here, that looks like following. There is a drift instability. So here you have the SOC unstable, SOC stable, and the traveling wave comes in like so. And if you look at the frequency, no, the traveling wave ends here. Ends here. It's an end point. Not right at the point. It's a drift instability. If you plot the frequency. So I hope I can make it. So this state has zero frequency, the SOC state. So here is the zero frequency SOC state. Zero here. And then this state here has finite. It starts with zero frequency. It goes like so. This is omega. It goes with a square root. Yes. Right. And then it continues up. I find that also binary. It's just very interesting. Why switch? Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Sure.